Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, March 30th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Trail to Provide Bike Path to Odessa. Cities Making Progress on Route That Will Allow Bicyclists to Avoid Vehicles, by Stuart Doreen. For Midland bicyclists wanting a safer ride to and from Odessa, there is good news. Officials in Midland, Odessa, are making progress on a pathway that will allow bicyclists the ability to ride and mostly avoid the vehicle traffic that is a fixture on State Highway 191 and its access roads. It will be called Wildcatter Trail, and project officials told the Reporter-Telegram that a bike pathway will go from the city of Midland to the Midland campus of the University of Texas Permian Basin, then down toward Midland International Airport, and across to UTPB's main campus in Odessa, through neighborhoods and other areas. Laurie Blong, chair of the Wildcatter Trail Committee, told the Reporter-Telegram, "Planning with Dunaway Engineering Group continues, and right-of-way still needs to be acquired." She said the longer-term project will fulfill a major quality-of-life initiative, as hike and bike paths have consistently ranked at the top of surveys of what Midlanders want in their community. Blong said the project will be expensive, and the expectation is that once community buy-in is achieved, that the area's philanthropic community will step forward on State Highway 191. The actual term for the pathway is, quote, multimodal transportation corridor, unquote, Blong said. And the hope is that the pathway can lead to a safer way for Midland from Midland. Recent history provides two high-profile examples when cyclists have died while trying to share the roads with vehicles. In April 2018, two bicyclists were killed and another was injured when an intoxicated driver hit the cyclists while they were traveling on State Highway 158. In June of 2018, a Midland pediatrician was killed when the driver of a vehicle failed to control its speed and ran into the rear of her bicycle on State Highway 191. The actual term for the pathway is, quote, multimodal transportation corridor, unquote, Blong said. And the hope is that the pathway can lead to a safer way for people from Midland and Odessa to take part in day-long events and enjoy each other's communities. Blog said there are not proposals for using tax money for Wildcatter's Trail, and she would not be voting in support of taxpayer funding unless there is an election and it is proven that it is the will of the community. Trail Park in Operation. Blog did mention that the Midland Trail Park is open in Southeast Midland for hikers, runners, bicyclists, and other visitors. Midland Trail Park is a project that the city partnered with the Permian Basin Bicycle Association, especially its president, Stephen Mitchell, to make that happen. There is a $30 annual membership fee for those wanting access to the multiple miles of trails. The fee helps to defray the ongoing maintenance costs of the facility. The city's involvement in this public-private partnership is the donation of land. Midland Trail Park is located near Harris Field Fire Training Facility, which resides on Farm to Market Road 307. This article is entitled, Official Warns of Mail Ballot Mistakes. Stop Your Vote from Getting Rejected by Following Right Steps, by Stuart Doreen. Midland County's elections administrator told the Reporter-Telegram that people are still not putting their driver's license number or last four digits of the Social Security number on the carrier envelope. The inability to do a mailed-in ballot correctly, she said, is forcing officials at the elections office to call people to come in and fix the carrier envelope. We just don't want to have them come and fix it if we can get them to do it the first time, Elections Administrator Carolyn Graves said. The Elections Office is currently receiving ballots for the May 7th election concerning state propositions. The runoff election for Republican and Democratic parties will take place May 24th. We ended up with less than 1% last election rejected, since we had over 100 voters come in and cure their ballot, Graves said. But if we can just get them to put that information on their application for a ballot or on the carrier envelope, we will be ahead of the game. Early voting for the May 7th election will begin April 25th. Early voting for the May 24th election begins May 16th. The ballots for the May 7th election have gone out, and we are already getting them back, and about 16% of them rejected, Graves said. We have contacted the voters, but if we can catch them before they mail them back, and they can put in that information, we are all in better shape. We just got the May 24th programming, and the ballots will start going out in a week or two, and hopefully we can reach that group before they mail them. The following are steps that will help those fill out their mail-in application, their mail-in ballot and envelope correctly. Section 1. Personal ID. You must now fill in the personal identification information on your application for a ballot by mail. You may use driver's license number, Texas personal ID number, election ID certificate number issued by DPS, last four of your social security number. It must be what we have on file. To be sure, you can use both. 2. Read carefully and fill in all boxes that apply to you. Section 2. Mail my ballot to your residence address, other address, mailing address listed on registration, address outside the county, voters absent from the county, hospital, nursing home, long-term care facility, or assisted living center, or a relative, voters aged 65 or disabled only. Section 3. Reasons for voting. 65 years or older, disability, expected to give birth within 3 weeks before or after election day, expected absence from the county, confined in jail or involuntary civil commitment. Section 4. Send me a ballot for the following elections. Annual, for all elections in voting year, January to December. For primary elections, must select a party. Uniform election dates, or primary elections, even-numbered years only. Section 5. Sign and date your ballot. Section 6. Witness or assistant fails to complete Section 6, it is a Class A misdemeanor. If the applicant is unable to make a mark, witness, if you check this box, you must state your relationship. Assistant, if you assisted the applicant in completing this application in the applicant's presence, or mailed, emailed, faxed the application on behalf of the applicant, witness or assistant, you must print name, sign, and show your address. Carrier envelope. You must put your driver's license number or the last four of your social security number on the carrier envelope. It must be what we have on file. If you have an assistant, they must fill out all the information and circle the box that they have or have not received compensation. If you have a witness, they must fill out every question and sign and date. Don't forget to sign your ballot carrier envelope in the red signature box. Optional line for phone and email. This helps if we need to contact you. This article is entitled, Abbott Says Feds Should Speed Up Permit Process for Oil Gas Projects. Governor cites hostility, regulations as challenges to energy access, by Mella McEwen. Odessa. Governor Greg Abbott traveled here Tuesday for a roundtable discussion on the latest challenges facing the state's energy industry. After hearing about challenges ranging from capital constraints to labor shortages and supply chain bottlenecks while sitting in Champion X's Odessa warehouse surrounded by electric submersible pumps, he said the state's energy industry needs to be unleashed. When we see the turmoil in Europe, Texas's energy industry has never been more important, he said. The governor called on the federal government to unleash the nation's energy industry by speedily approving permits for liquefied natural gas export facilities, for new pipelines and oil and gas leases on federal lands and waters. Unleashing the industry would not only benefit companies like Champion X, but the employees' families, he said. This is not just a business. There are real people involved, Abbott said. It's our responsibility to maintain these great-paying jobs. He noted that Russia has leverage over Ukraine because of Ukraine's dependence on Russian energy, saying no country should have to rely on a country like Russia for energy. Texas has an obligation to ensure the U.S. has access to energy, he stated. He cited the commitment and innovation of oil and gas companies in developing a path forward for future oil and gas development, and said Texas must continue to lead the U.S. and internationally in producing oil, natural gas, and all fuels. Oil service companies, Abbott continued, are developing thousands of ways to transform the way oil and gas is produced, so that it is produced more efficiently, more cleanly, and in a more environmentally friendly way. Shankar Annamalai, Champion's vice president, Permian Geomarket, told the governor that every morning our people roll up their sleeves and help customers figure out how to produce oil and gas efficiently and in an environmentally friendly way. We're also constantly investing in other offerings. Tracy Bentley, president and chief executive officer of the Permian Strategic Partnership, which helped sponsor the roundtable discussion, said the governor has a deep understanding of the importance of the energy industry and of the Permian Basin to the state's overall economy. He has been here so many times to learn more, she said. Asked what the state can do to help Texas energy producers increase output and expand midstream infrastructure, Abbott listed hostility to the industry as a challenge. He noted the inadequate investment in the industry and said the state has passed a law barring financial institutions from divesting their energy-related investments. In the state of Texas, if you or your business divest from oil and gas, the state will divest from you, Abbott said. With the ninth largest economy in the world, he said that has gotten some attention, pointing to complaints from Citibank as an example. He again called on the federal government to speed up the permitting process, saying the government has slowed the process since President Biden took office last year. That's something America needs to know. The increase in the price of oil and gas and then gasoline prices, it was not Russia created. It was oncoming from new regulations. It was oncoming from the slowing of the permitting process, the immediate decision to cancel the Keystone Pipeline, he said. The Biden administration bears responsibility and has a duty to ease prices and can do that by accelerating the permitting process, opening pipelines, opening oil and gas leasing on federal lands and offshore. This is the Community from the Front page. This article is entitled Odessa Arts Launches First Fashion Week by J.C. Lewis. Odessa Arts, in partnership with Sewell BMW, will launch the first Permian Basin Fashion Week from Wednesday to Sunday. Fashion Week will kick off with a welcome reception at 5:30 p.m. Wednesday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center for designer Daniel Esquivel of Austin. Esquivel is a well-known figure in the Texas fashion community and was a contestant on Project Runway Season 2 and Runway All-Stars Season 3. Esquivel has spent the last few weeks creating a 12-look collection that will debut at Odessa Arts Black and White Ball on Friday. The fundraiser for Odessa Arts has sold out. This year's event will also honor Medlander Lissa Noel Wagner, Joanne Davenport Littleton, and the ECISD Fine Arts Department. Odessa Arts is always looking for an opportunity to expand programming, according to a press release. Fashion Week will conclude with a trunk and brunch at Barrel and Derrick from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Sunday. The trunk and brunch will allow the community to shop local fashion alongside Escabel, while enjoying mimosas and the best chicken and waffles in Texas, according to Odessa Arts Executive Director Randy Hamm. Confirmed vendors include Escavel, who will take orders for custom garments, XO Bridal, Kirby's Closet, and Candy Drip Customs. Reservations are required and can be made at www.event-brite.com. Permian Basin Fashion Week schedule of events. Meet the Designer Reception, Wednesday, 5:30 p.m., White Buffalo Bar at Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, Black and White Ball, The Art of Fashion, Saturday, 6:30 p.m., Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, sold out. Trunk Brunch, Sunday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., Barrel and Derrick, Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Reservations required. This article is entitled City Hosting Event at Windlands Park by Midland Reporter Telegram. The City of Midland invites residents to take a walk at Windlands Park on Wednesday. March 30th is Walk in the Park Day, and the city is encouraging anyone to invest in our health without spending any money by taking a walk in your neighborhood park. The City of Midland Parks and Recreation will be recognizing this national holiday with activities from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Activities include Park Cleanup with Friends of Windlands, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Jumpers, Disc Golf, and Scavenger Hunt, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Cornhole Tournament. Free entry, no prizes, starting 9:30 a.m. Story time, 10 a.m. Parachute game, 11 a.m. Face painting with Miss Motsy, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Spike ball tournament, noon to 2 p.m. Incredible edible aquifers to keep Midland beautiful, 1 to 2 p.m. Want to have a picnic for lunch? Food trucks will also be available from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. This article is entitled Wadley Barron Intersection to Close for Roadway Repairs by Tim Fisher. The intersection of A Street and Cuthbert Avenue will be closed starting Thursday and lasting approximately 4 weeks for roadway improvements. The project, part of the 2017 road bond, will be completed in two phases. A Street traffic will remain open during both phases. Phase 1 will close traffic on Cuthbert on the west side, then switch traffic to complete the east side of the intersection. Traffic will be detoured at D Street for Phase 1. Phase 2 detour will be on Big Spring. The city is encouraging the traveling public to use Michigan Avenue, Louisiana Avenue, Golf Course Road, or Wall Street to avoid the work zone. Local business access will be maintained at all times from either side of the closure. Drivers are encouraged to plan ahead and utilize the detours that will be in place. This article is entitled Man Arrested for Spitting at MPD Officer by Mercedes Cordero. Javier Sines, 20, was arrested Friday for spitting at a Midland police officer's face. Sines is being charged with harassment of a public servant, a third-degree felony charge. He is also charged with resisting arrest, search, transportation, possession of marijuana under 2 ounces, and public intoxication, all misdemeanor charges. Midland police officers were dispatched to the Whataburger on North Midkiff Road in reference to a disturbance. The caller advised that a male inside a white truck had punched a Whataburger employee through the window. The suspect was described as wearing red and black pants. Officers made contact with three males who were involved in the disturbance. The male in a black shirt and red pants was identified as Signs. During the investigation, one of the males stated Signs tried to fight with a member of the group and then a Whataburger employee, according to the affidavit. He also stated Signs was underage and highly intoxicated. During the investigations, MPD officers found a small clear bag underneath a patrol car directly behind where Signs was standing, according to the affidavit. Based on how it looked and smelled, officers believed it to be marijuana. After Signs was placed under arrest for public intoxication of a minor and possession of marijuana, he began pulling back from the officers and attempting to resist arrest, according to the affidavit. Once in the patrol car, Signs spit on an officer's face, according to the affidavit. Signs has been released on bond. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, In a Shift, Abbott Touts States Renewables, by Jeremy Wallace, Austin Bureau. As oil production is booming in Texas, Governor Greg Abbott on Monday was putting a big focus on the state's growing renewable energy sector during a speech in Austin. You can have fossil fuels while at the very same time be leaders in renewable energy, Abbott told a group with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, touting the state's growing wind and solar energy production. We've got to be very clear that all forms of energy are essential. Abbott called Texas an international leader in wind power and predicted it will be the number one state for solar energy by the end of the year. It was a very different tone from a year ago when Abbott appeared to blame renewable energy sources, specifically wind turbines, for failing during the 2021 winter storm that left millions of Texans without power and resulted in more than 200 cold-related deaths. This shows how the Green New Deal would be a deadly deal for the United States of America, Abbott said in an interview on Fox News Channel with host Sean Hannity last February. Our wind and our solar got shut down, and they were collectively more than 10% of our power grid, and that thrust Texas into a situation where it was lacking power on a statewide basis. While some wind farms were down, others remained in operation. The state's bigger problem during the 2021 winter storm was fossil fuel disruptions and electricity providers that had not winterized their facilities, as detailed by a Houston Chronicle investigation. It wasn't just Abbott. Republicans in the Texas legislature have loudly criticized federal policies in the aftermath of the storm for giving tax incentives to solar and wind production that they say have tilted the energy market too much to benefit renewables. But Abbott on Monday sounded more like an advocate for the state's growing renewable energy sector. Oil and gas are going to continue to remain necessary for national security, for daily usage. But at the same time, you can promote renewables, which Texas is both a national and international leader in, he told the U.S. Chamber of Commerce's Committee of 100. Abbott also touted the state's booming oil industry, which will help cut prices at the pump. And he pushed back against those who have tarnished fossil fuels. Abbott's focus on renewable energy comes as his Democratic opponent for re-election, Beto O'Rourke, has been talking about the same issue. Just moments before Abbott spoke in Austin, O'Rourke was on social media talking about the need for diversifying the energy sector. Texas can leverage our oil and gas expertise to lead on new energy sources like geothermal power, offshore wind, and hydrogen, he said. we can create jobs and make America more energy independent. Climate scientists have said the world must shift quickly away from fossil fuels to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. But 60% of U.S. electricity still comes from carbon-based fuels. Some estimates show the nation would have to double or triple wind and solar capacity over the next few years to meet aggressive fossil fuel reduction plans touted by the Biden administration. This article is entitled, OPEC Plus Still Sees No Need to Change Oil Supply Plan Despite Russian War, by Verity Ratcliffe, Grant Smith, and Anthony DiPaola, Bloomberg. OPEC and its allies signaled that they still see no need to adapt their oil supply plans, even as the Russian-Ukraine conflict threatens the biggest market disruption in decades. "We won't add resources if the market is balanced, and the resources are in the market," United Arab Emirates Energy Minister Suhail Al-Mazrui said Monday at a conference in Dubai. OPEC Plus isn't focused on whether the specific loss of Russian shipments is causing an imbalance, he added. A number of delegates said privately they expect the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its partners to stick to their long-standing plan and ratify another modest supply increase when they meet on Thursday. The 23-nation coalition, led by Saudi Arabia, has so far rebuffed pressure to fill in for Russian supplies, which have been shunned by some buyers over the invasion of Ukraine. Riyadh and Abu Dhabi are keen to preserve ties with Moscow, indicating that they see no shortage even as Russian exports slump by a quarter and prices hold near $100 a barrel. If no alterations are made, OPEC Plus will ratify the increase of 430,000 barrels a day scheduled for May. With many members struggling to fulfill their planned increases over the past few months, and global demand bouncing back from the pandemic, that decision may cause markets to tighten further, exacerbating the inflationary pressure hitting the world economy. Russian alliance. The UAE said the partnership with Russia, the largest crude producer in OPEC Plus after Saudi Arabia, remains solid. It's a stance that may disappoint the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden and other leaders seeking to isolate President Vladimir Putin. Russia is an important member of OPEC Plus and is likely to remain in the group, Al-Mazrui said. "This is an alliance to stay. This is an alliance we need." When OPEC Plus last met at the start of this month, Saudi Energy Minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman made a studious effort to skirt any discussion of Russian military aggression or its market consequences, hurrying the meeting to conclude after just 13 minutes. The prince's discretion is easy to understand. The relationship with Moscow has been significant both economically and politically for the two Persian Gulf exporters, bolstering their control over world crude markets and allowing them to lessen their reliance on Washington. That's been particularly critical for Riyadh, as Biden sought to sideline Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman following the killing of columnist Jamal Khashoggi. The wider oil market has seen a divided response to Moscow's attack on its neighbor. Major oil companies like Total Energies SE and Shell PLC are winding down oil purchases from Russia amid widespread condemnation of the invasion. However, China's oil refiners are discreetly purchasing cheap Russian crude as the nation's supply continues to seep into the market. India has also been picking up volumes. Even as buyers are divided, the shockwaves of the invasion have been universally felt. Brent futures briefly surged to a 13-year peak near $139 a barrel earlier this month, fanning the inflationary surge that's inflicting a cost-of-living crisis on millions. If OPEC Plus opts once again for a minimal response, that pain may only worsen. This article is entitled Oil Gas Production Jobs Jump in Texas by Amanda Drain, staff writer. Employment in Texas oil and gas production jumped by more than 5,000 jobs last month, making it the biggest leap in over a decade and the second highest in 30 years, the Texas Oil and Gas Association said in a statement. The oil and gas production sector employed 181,900 people in Texas last month, up 16% compared to 157,000 in September 2020, the lowest point of the pandemic-induced employment slump. The job growth comes as the war in Ukraine intensifies, disrupting oil and gas supplies from Russia, a leading world supplier of oil, and driving up oil prices. Now, Texas continues to lead the way in meeting the world's soaring demand for oil, said the association's president, Todd Staples. A year ago, many people were questioning the future of oil and natural gas, he said. Today, people are questioning if they have a future without it. Our nation has an opportunity to reshape American energy policy that recognizes oil and natural gas as an asset rather than a liability. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, March 30th. Gilberto Adame Lopez. Gilberto Adame Lopez, 33, of Midland, passed away March 28th. Born January 29th, 1989, in Delicias, Chihuahua, Mexico, to Cruz Maria Gomez and Gilberto Lopez Sr., he moved to Midland at an early age. Left to cherish his memory, his wife, Cynthia Lopez, two children, Alex Lopez, Jocelyn Lopez, his parents, Gilberto Lopez Sr. and wife, Evlalia Lopez, Cruz Maria Gomez, husband, Adolfo Gomez, sister, Melissa Lopez, brothers, Joel Lopez, Angel Lopez, Isaiah Lopez, maternal grandmother, Esperanza Adame, mother-in-law, Adelia Noyan, father-in-law, Nan Noyan, brother-in-law, Robert Rios, as well as many uncles, aunts, nieces, and cousins. He is preceded in death by his paternal grandfather, Anselmo Lopez, paternal grandmother, Esperanza Lopez, and maternal grandfather, Cornelio Lopez. Visitation will be held Wednesday, March 30th, from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., with a prayer service starting at 7 p.m., at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be Thursday, March 31st at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church. Interment will immediately follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Joanne Weatherspoon. Born on March 2nd, 1946 in Leona, Texas, to the late Reverend Lon Evans and Mary Alexander. She leaves to cherish her memories four daughters, Darletha Shell Birch of Midland, Arlene Jill Weatherspoon of Euless, Karen Sean Eddie Riley of Grand Prairie, Evelyn Robert Royals of Fort Worth, two sons, Irvin Charnique Weatherspoon Jr. of Midland, Willie Crystal Weatherspoon of Lubbock, one stepson, Terry Kinta McGee of Lubbock, as well as nine grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren. Viewing will be Thursday, March 31st from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. with a receiving of friends from 6 to 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Friday, April 1st at 11 a.m. at Goodwill Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Garden. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to Pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. John Edward Meyer. John Edward Meyer passed away on March 25th. John was born on September 9th, 1940, in Wichita, Kansas. John was preceded in death by his parents, Louise Bogman Meyer, Robert F. Meyer, and his wife, Marianne McCrae. John is survived by his stepson, Thomas McCrae Sloan, and his wife, Shirley of Midland, and Katie Goggins and her husband, Chris of Gunbarrel City. He had 6 step-grandchildren and 9 great-grandchildren. Laureen Tarpley. Laureen Tarpley, age 82, of Brady, died Sunday, March 27th at Shannon Medical Center in San Angelo. The family will host a visitation from 12:30 p.m. to 1:30 p.m. Wednesday, March 30th at Stevens Funeral Home Chapel in Coleman. Family and friends are invited to a graveside funeral service at 2 p.m. Wednesday, March 30th at Coleman City Cemetery Pavilion, with Reverend Marvin Hale officiating. Interment will follow in the Coleman City Cemetery. She was born Velma Lorraine Shipman on May 21, 1939, in Campwood, Texas, to J.B. Shipman and Edna B. Smith Shipman. Preceding Laureen in death are her parents, J.B. and Edna Shipman, her husband, Jimmy Dale Tarpley, and one brother, Billy Shipman. She is survived by her daughter, Sabrina Edwards, and husband, Dan of Midland, as well as many grandchildren and great-grandchildren and several nieces and nephews. Remembrances and condolences can be expressed to the family via the virtual guestbook on Lorraine's tribute page at www.stevensfuneralhome.com. Molly Evelyn Fox. Molly Evelyn Fox was an only child born in Reno, Nevada on May 25, 1930. Molly is survived and deeply missed by her daughters Lynn Maxwell and Jan Parsley, as well as 3 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren. Graveside burial services will take place Sunday, April 2nd at 1 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park. In lieu of flowers, the family respectfully asks for a donation of any size to the Best Friends Animal Society in memory of Molly Parsley. Rosalinda Rodriguez. Rosalinda Rosie, as she was known to most, was born March 19, 1948, in Harlingen, Texas. She is survived by her children, Cynthia Rodriguez and Christina and Robert Brown, as well as many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Viewing will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, March 31st, at Wade Family Funeral Home with Rosary at 7 p.m. Mass Monday, April 4th, 2 p.m., at St. Vincent de Paul Catholic Church. Death Notices. Billy Joe Fagan. Billy Joe Fagan, 86, of Midland, passed away March 26th. The family will receive guests from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Tuesday, April 5th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, April 6th, at Crestview Baptist Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Charlie Beard. Charlie Beard, 86, of Midland, passed away March 28th. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, April 1st, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, April 2nd, at Temple Baptist Church, with interment following at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, March 30th, 2022. Governor says state has Biden's back. Abbott Hole's Energy Industry Roundtable then meets press by Bob Campbell. Governor Greg Abbott said Tuesday in Odessa that the state's new law prohibiting all Texas companies from contracting with or investing in companies that divest from the energy industry has put a serious crimp in the operations of institutions like Citibank and BlackRock Investment Management Corporation. Referring to Senate Bill 13, enacted last year for non-compliant institutions to be excluded from participating in state-managed pension funds, Abbott said Citibank is no longer getting the municipal bond deals they used to get, and BlackRock is trying to dance on both sides of this issue, which shows that we got their attention. Also, T-boning President Joe Biden and his administration, the governor said the administrator's hostility to oil and gas has stifled capital investment in the industry. Their hostility against the oil and gas sector shows up in defunding or inadequate investment, he said. We operate at the speed of business in Texas, and they slow down the process. Asked if there is anything else the state can do to increase oil and gas production in the Permian Basin, Abbott said it has cut regulations and expedited the eminent domain process in which the government may now pay compensation and expropriate private property for public use. The Biden administration started the rise in gasoline prices by shutting down the Keystone Pipeline project because people knew demand would increase as we came out of COVID, he said. Abbott said the administration should open up the permitting process and stop the prohibition of leasing for drilling on federal lands. He held a 15-minute news conference at the Champion X submersible pump manufacturing company southwest of town on the north side of I-20. That followed a private half-hour roundtable discussion. Representatives of Diamondback Energy, ConocoPhillips, Occidental Petroleum, Pioneer Natural Resources, and the Permian Strategic Partnership took part. Reporting that Champion X also features chemical technologies and emissions management along with artificial lifts to move fluids safely out of the ground, the company's director of sales and operations said it has 900 employees at more than 20 locations in the basin. Chase Alexander, the firm's regional sales manager, said it has been in the operation for 75 years, helping the private sector to drive technology advancement and assisting its customers in the cleaner production of oil and gas. Tebow, believe in each other. Sewell event on leadership features a packed house by Michael Bauer. On Tuesday, business people, managers, school teachers, and others from around the Permian Basin came to the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center for the 20th edition of the Sewell Leadership Event. The event was a day-long conference that featured key motivational speakers, including Heisman Trophy winner Tim Tebow, as well as authors John Maxwell and Andy Stanley. The event, which is put on by the Sewell family of companies, is held each year to try and help inspire business owners, professionals, and students and others. Tebow, who is a two-time national champion and a 2000 Heisman Trophy winner from the University of Florida, as well as a former NFL player and professional baseball player, shared some of his life experiences with leadership and some of the lessons he's learned. One of those lessons, he said, is to learn where the boundaries are. Know the decisions you're going to make before you put yourself in a particular situation, Tebow said. Don't wait until you get into temptation and then figure out where the line is. That's something that really helped me out. Tebow says he credits his parents for teaching him that lesson. After playing college ball at Florida, Tebow was a first-round draft pick who spent a couple of years in the NFL. The four-time New York Times best-selling author, speaker, and football analyst also talked about his work with the Tim Tebow Foundation. He also talked about how believing in someone can impact their life. It's incredible to see the difference between someone who believes in themselves and someone who doesn't, Tebow said. You have that ability to speak life into people, into your families and your communities. You have the ability to talk to someone who is going through a rough time and believe in them. You can still believe in their work and value. Maxwell is also a New York Times best-selling author, speaker, and coach who has sold more than 33 million books in 50 languages. His organizations, John Maxwell Company, the John Maxwell Team, EQIP, and the John Maxwell Leadership Foundation, have translated his teaching into 70 languages. One of the things that Maxwell talked about in his speech was accountability. We know that power corrupts some people, so when I have power or authority to do what I want, what's going to be my stabilizer? I think the answer is accountability, Maxwell said. I think accountability is essential for any of us who have a lot of power in our lives. I think that everybody has to be accountable somewhat. In addition to being an author, Stanley is also a communicator and a pastor who founded the Atlanta-based North Point Ministries in 1995. Today, NPM consists of 8 churches in the Atlanta area and a network of nearly 130 churches around the globe that collectively serve nearly 185,000 people weekly. One of the things Stanley talked about was communication and motivation. You need to understand, and the people who work with you need to understand, and be able to understand the question. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm expected to do. But what are we doing, and how does what I know connect to what we are doing? Because when those dots get disconnected emotionally, then people lose their passion and motivation, Stanley said. This year's event was sold out with around 1,827 people expected to attend. This year's conference was the first time to take place in an in-person setting since before the pandemic. Testimony in Murder Trial Details Shooting by Kim Smith. In the moments before he was shot to death, Odessawan Trejanal White walked over to an acquaintance's car to turn on her headlights after noticing she and her friends had been driving without them. Tuesday was the second day in the murder trial of Rondell Gerald Ferris, a 41-year-old Odessa man accused of shooting White to death shortly after 2 a.m. July 13, 2018. Jurors gathered in the 161st Ector County District Court spent most of the day watching and re-watching video surveillance. Prosecutors Melissa Williams and Scott Turner believe proves their case against Ferris. But they also heard from Claudia Perez, an acquaintance of the 41-year-old victim. Perez testified she and two girlfriends spent a few hours at Club Tequila on 8th Street, and they ran into White, whom she had met a few times before, and his brother, Roderick. When the club closed, they decided to go to Jaguars, Odessa. Before heading to the adult entertainment club, Perez told jurors they decided to stop at a convenience store at 8th Street and Highway 80 so her friends could use the restroom. When they arrived, they parked next to White's Cadillac, and her friends went inside while she stayed in the passenger seat of her Dodge Challenger, Perez said. White came over to her car, turned on her headlights, and went back to his car, she testified. Moments later, a man with an orange cup walked in front of her car and kept staring at her, prompting her to lock all of her doors, Perez said. White got out of his car and asked the man if everything was okay, Perez said. He didn't respond in a nice way, and it turned into an argument, Perez said. After watching for a few minutes, Perez says she got out of her car and told White he should just get back into his car, and he did. However, she saw the other man go to his car, which was parked behind hers, and then return. She saw the man had a gun about the same time her friends were walking back to the car. I told them I saw a man with a gun and we needed to leave, Perez said. As they were getting ready to get onto 8th Street, Perez said she heard 4 or 5 shots and they turned around and came back. I saw Treginal on the floor, Perez said. Under cross-examination from defense attorney Jeff Nicholson, Perez testified she never saw Ferris that night, either at the club or at the convenience store. Jurors spent most of Tuesday hearing the testimony of Odessa Police Department Sergeant Justin Cade, who was a detective with the Robbery Homicide Division of the department at the time White died. Cade told jurors he arrived on the scene about an hour after the shooting and immediately recognized White's vehicle because he was aware White was on parole after serving time for murdering a member of the Crips criminal street gang in 1996. Prosecutors have told jurors Ferris and another man charged in the case, Christopher George, are members of the Crips. The sergeant testified he spoke with several witnesses the morning of the slaying and obtained 2 surveillance videos from the cameras inside the store. Jurors watched the 2 original videos, plus several copies of the videos that had been slowed down, lightened, and otherwise enhanced. The videos showed Perez's friend in the store and Ferris as well. Moments after Perez's friends leave the store, a man identified as Christopher George is seen approaching the door of the store and gesturing for someone inside the store to come out. He is then seen taking a step into the store and speaking to Ferris. Ferris then runs to the door, momentarily holding his right side before going outside and running to the left. Store displays block Ferris from view, but seconds later, 4 shots are heard. White can be seen dropping to the ground, and Ferris can be seen running away. Roderick White is then seen running into the store yelling something about his brother before ripping off his shirt and running outside. Seconds later, he punches one of the store's glass walls, and a woman is heard screaming, "Oh my God," repeatedly. During questioning from Williams, Cade testified he believes Ferris was holding a gun underneath his shirt. He also told jurors that based on the location of 3 of the 4 shell casings found at the scene and based on the bullet holes found in White's car, it is clear White was shot in the head by Ferris and not by anyone standing near the fuel pumps. The 4th shell casing was found hours after the shooting, by a transient who threw it into the trash and then called police, Cade said. Nicholson tried to suggest that the fourth gunshot was fired from a different location than the other three, but Cade disagreed. The former detective said he thinks police personnel may have missed the .40 caliber gun shell because it was under White's car or remained unseen in a puddle of blood. OPD Sergeant Trent Autry testified the three shell cases were found roughly 25 feet from the store's front door. Kay told jurors George and Ferris were identified after screenshots of the surveillance videos were shared with other law enforcement officers and the media. Clothing found at George's home also matched those seen on the surveillance tapes. Detectives traced both men using phone records and money transfers. George was arrested within days of the murder, and Ferris was arrested in Compton, California, after 5 months later. Cade also testified an orange cup found at the scene and a necklace found inside White's car were linked through DNA to relatives of Ferris. George, 38, is still awaiting trial. The case is being presided over by visiting Judge Rodney Satterwhite.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.